The Peter Schiff Show. Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to deal with the rising cost of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage, pretty much anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Well, with Yahoo Finance, you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need in order to help you reach that financial freedom. And when it comes to your financial future, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, you've invested all that you can. And now you need to take those investments to the next level by using what every financial great uses. Yahoo Finance. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome, everybody. I am finally back at my home here in Puerto Rico. Been traveling for about 2.5 months. Got the kids back in school. And so I am here back at work. You know, by the way, a lot of people have been suggesting that I upgrade the camera. So I finally ordered a 4K camera, which will be here next week. So pretty soon you'll be seeing me in much greater clarity, although I'm not really sure that's going to work out well for me, given that I am 60 years old. But, you know, I'm surprised at just how much those things cost. But anyway, I decided to go for it. I want to begin today's podcast, though, by speaking about the CPI numbers that came out on Thursday. They were very highly anticipated because everybody is looking at the CPI. And the main reason that everybody is so focused on the CPI, it's not really because, you know, they're really worried about inflation, although most people are. I'm talking about Wall Street. When I'm talking about investors, that's who's like anxiously looking at the CPI. And a lot of wealthy investors, you know, hedge fund managers, all these Wall Street guys, they don't really care about, you know, what it costs to go to the grocery store or how much it costs to fill up their car with gas. That's not a problem. What they're worried about is interest rates. That's a big problem because a lot of these guys are highly leveraged and they've been gouging on a banquet of cheap money for more than a decade. And the reason that everybody is waiting for inflation to go back down to the holy grail of 2% is so interest rates can go back down. That's what they're concerned about, not the price of milk, you know, or the price of gas, the price of money, credit. That's what everybody is concerned about. So everybody wants inflation to go back down so the Fed can finally reduce interest rates and get them back down to a level that is affordable. Because remember, because the Fed kept interest rates so low for so long, everybody's got a bunch of debt, right? Everybody just acted as if rates would never go up. And of course, you know, that was foolish because it was inevitable that they would eventually go up. But again, no one cared, right? Everybody just wanted to party, and dance while the music was playing. They didn't care that it was eventually going to stop. And so they just acted like it would go on forever. And so everybody is waiting for lower rates, and it's not going to happen because inflation is not going back down to 2%. It's just not going to happen. It really never should have been below 2% or even anywhere near 2%. The fact that we got away with these low CPI prints for so many years, despite the fact that we created so much inflation. Again, remember, the CPI is measuring inflation. It's not inflation. Inflation is not prices going up. It's not wages going up. It's not costs going up. No, it's money supply going up. And money supply went way up, even if it's shrinking a little bit now, which is just temporary, it went way up. And you're not going to get rid of all that inflation just by taking rates from 0 to 5.25, 5.5, whatever, and leaving them there for a year or so. That's not going to do it. It's not going to reverse better than a decade of inflation creation, especially when the government, which is ultimately the source of the inflation that the Fed creates or the impetus for the Fed to create the inflation, when you have budget deficits exploding, even before we're officially in a recession, the deficits are just skyrocketing. We have $2 trillion, deficits, really, budget deficits, and record trade deficits. Inflation is not going away. Inflation is going to get much worse. And again, what people still don't get is a year of interest rate hikes, that's a price hike, right? Interest rates, the price of money, it's a price. It's gone up. That is going to factor into the price of everything. I think a lot of other products and services have a long way to go as far as hikes in order to make up for that. Because it's a cost structure, just like labor costs. You know, we know labor costs are going up. You know, the big UPS now, you know, they're going to have to pay. I think I read that truck drivers, the long haul truck drivers, I don't even think they've ratified the contract yet. These guys actually might be holding out for more money. But I think that they're going to be paying these truck drivers $170,000 a year to drive trucks back and forth. and obviously, what's UPS going to do? They're going to pass that on. Now, obviously, at some point, they're going to get rid of these truck drivers completely. You know, truck driver is the number one occupation in America for men. And all these truck drivers, of course, are going to be eliminated. And one of the reasons is the high cost of employing them. Of course, part of that has to do with the regulations involved in all the labor laws for these truck drivers. But as these wage costs are going up, clearly, this gets passed on. Now, it's not that the wages are causing the prices to go up. Inflation is causing both wages and prices to go up. But sometimes there's a sequence. You get inflation, right? Food prices go up, rents go up. So now the workers need more money. And so they get a raise. And now their employers have to charge more for whatever they were doing. And everything kind of goes up. But what gets the ball rolling is the money printing, the expansion of the money supply. So all these guys that talk about a wage price spiral, they're wrong. Those are false things concocted by the government to try to blame the private sector for inflation. The same thing as cost push inflation. People say, well, prices go up because costs go up. But that's circular logic because costs are just another word for prices. One person's cost is another person's price. If I'm a business, you know, what's my cost of raw materials? Well, it's the price that I'm paying. It's the price that my suppliers are charging me. So it's two words for the same thing. So, you know, saying prices go up because costs go up is like saying prices go up because prices go up. Well, that doesn't explain anything. What causes it to happen? It's inflation. It's the increase in money supply. And so nothing that the Fed has done thus far is going to succeed in bringing inflation back down to 2%. Now, what has happened is that we have seen a reduction of inflation from 9% headline to 2% headline. And that's mainly because we had a 50% drop in oil prices. And then you had some other commodity prices that came down, and we had a big rise in the dollar. And so all of that helped bring down headline CPI. But that's just transitory. That's not going to stay that way. But meanwhile, core, which never went up nearly as much as the headline, hasn't come down nearly as much. It's basically still around 5%, even as we're troughing on the reduction in inflation. And the Fed's got interest rates above 5%. You know, it's like they've got interest rates all the way above 5%. They've shot all their big guns, basically. There's not much left in the barrel. You know, maybe another hike or two. But it's like, you know, Superman is there and you empty your revolver and all the bullets bounce off his chest. And then it's like, well, now what am I going to do? I can throw the gun at him, but that's not going to do anything. I mean, they don't have anything left. They can throw the gun at inflation, but that's about it. Because if the Fed really gets tough on inflation and moves interest rates up to where they need to be, well, everything collapses, right? Because nobody can afford to pay the debt. We just got the downgrade of U.S. Treasury debt, you know, by Fitch. I talked about that on my last podcast. You know, by the way, this week, Moody's came out and they downgraded a bunch of regional banks, you know, which is typically what happens. You know, they close the barn doors after the horses have left, except in this case, there's still some horses in the barn. I mean, they didn't wait till the absolute end to downgrade. Now, yeah, they could have done it a year or two ago. I mean, there was plenty of evidence that they should have downgraded these banks a year ago or more. But even now, it's not merely too late. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot more downgrades to come because the banks are in a lot of trouble because of rising interest rates and falling asset prices, which, you know, is going to happen because, you know, it was low interest rates that propped up the assets. And now interest rates have gone up, so asset prices come collapsing down, but that's the collateral for their loans. Those are the assets that they have on their books. So the banks are in a lot of trouble. The Federal Reserve completely decimated the U.S. banking industry. Not just the Federal Reserve, but the U.S. government, through guaranteed bank accounts, completely corrupted the free market so that all of these banks were loaded up with risk because there were no free market forces to deter all that risk taking. So the government completely destroyed the U.S. banking system. We just haven't seen all of the consequences yet, but believe me, they're coming. But I want to get back to this July CPI that everybody was waiting for. And the consensus was that we were going to get a 0.2% increase in the CPI. And that's what we got. We got a 0.2% increase, which is the same increase we got the month before. So that doesn't seem like we're making a lot of progress. Year over year, we came out a little bit better than the consensus. They were looking for 3.3. That's the overall headline number. We got an increase of 3.2, but last month in June, it was 3%. And now we're up to 3.2. We're going in the wrong direction. We're supposed to be going down to 2. Instead, we just went up from 3 to 3.2. I'm going to continue to talk about this CPI. I'm going to get to the core and also the PPI numbers that came out the following day on Friday after this quick commercial break. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
All right, we're talking about the CPI, which is the government's way of measuring the effects of inflation. Of course, it's a very dishonest way, deliberately by design. The government doesn't want the people to know just how bad inflation is, and so they try to hide the effects with a highly rigged CPI. Again, it's not that somebody fudges the numbers. It's that the very methodology that is used to compile the numbers is flawed. So by design, when they calculate the increase in prices, they're only capturing a portion of how much prices actually went up. So they don't have to rig the data. The index is already pre-rigged for them. So, you know, it makes it a lot easier for the government to try to fool the people. But ultimately, the people have to pay the prices. So they're paying the real prices, not the pretend prices that are part of the CPI. But anyway, getting to the core numbers, which is X food and energy, there we've had a smaller rise. The expectation was up 0.2, and we met that with up 0.2. And the year-over-year increase, X food and energy, the year-over-year increase was up 4.7, and they were looking for an increase of 4.8. So it's actually the core that's hotter. I got them backwards for a second. The core number has been higher than the headline number because of the negative effects of falling oil prices. Well, that's been reversed. I mean, oil actually was slightly down on the week. I had thought that we would have a bigger up week with some momentum. Instead, we got some profit taken. We did make a new high. Oil prices got above 84, which was a new high for this move. And they ended up selling off a bit. We closed around 82.5 or so, just off about 20 or 30 cents on the week. But if you look at where oil prices are since the July CPI came out, if you look at what happened, in the last month, right? Oil prices are up like another 15%. So that's going to have to show up in the August CPI number. We're going to have to start seeing the impact of rising energy prices, which is why I think that we've probably troughed here on these improving CPI numbers. And now we're just heading the other way. But again, even X food and energy, we're at 4.7. If that's the preferred measure, if the Fed just ignores the headline, which is what it always says when the headline is higher, because you got food and energy prices going up and they want to focus on the core. If the core is only at 4.7, that's all they've accomplished. Moving rates from 0 to 5.25, they've only managed to bring core CPI year over year to 4.7. That's it. They want to go all the way back down to 2. They don't have a chance because, again, they don't have much left in the way of rate hikes. And we're already kind of bottoming out because they've got no help whatsoever from Congress, the president. There's been no cuts to government spending. They're increasing government spending. And the deficits are increasing to finance it, which ultimately puts tremendous pressure on the Fed to end its quantitative tightening and return to quantitative easing. Just a question of when does the Fed blink? They already blinked once with the bailouts of the banks, and they're probably going to need another bailout soon enough. So even though they have been shrinking the balance sheet, I expect that process to reverse. In fact, I think that before the Fed starts cutting rates, they're going to be expanding the balance sheet again. A lot of people are thinking that, oh, well, the Fed's going to start cutting rates while they continue to expand, to shrink the balance sheet. I think it's more likely that what stops first is the balance sheet, that they're going to reverse that before they start cutting rates. But they are going to have to cut rates because the government is going to need the help, because the government can't afford to pay the interest on the national debt. And when it becomes a big enough problem, then the Fed is going to provide some relief, which is going to just send inflation numbers much, much higher. Let me get to the PPI numbers that came out on Friday, though, because these, I guess, were looking a little bit better on a year-over-year basis. But again, I am expecting much bigger increases in producer prices. They're going to be affected by the increasing energy prices, the increasing transportation prices. Everything is going up. So the consensus was for an increase of 0.2 for July, and we actually beat it. We were up by 0.3. So the inflation number on the producer front anyway was a little bit higher than expected. And the same thing with the year over year. It was supposed to go up 0.7. Instead, it went up 0.8. But the bigger news is the difference between the prior month, because the June number was up just 0.1, although that was revised to up 0.2. But we've gone from up 0.2 to up 0.8. That's the wrong direction, right? It's supposed to be going down, and now it's going up. Ex food and energy, the core, was up 0.3. Again, that was also a bigger increase than was expected, which was up 0.2. Now, that was hotter than the prior month. That was actually revised from up 0.1 to negative 0.1. But again, that's a move in the wrong direction, from a decline of 0.1 to a rise of 0.3. And year over year, ex food and energy, it's up 2.4. Again, above consensus of up 2.3. It's equal to the prior month, but there's no more improvement. Maybe nobody is bothering to notice this, but they're talking about all the improvements. Those improvements are in the rearview mirror. What we're looking at in the windshield is pretty scary when it comes to future inflation. All you got to do is open your eyes to see all those pressures there. But people seem to be blind to that. And you know, not only do we keep getting these bad news, bad numbers on inflation, but we continue to get other numbers that evidence a weak economy. Now, I was looking at the consumer credit numbers, which jumped again on the week, $17.9 billion. They were looking for a $14 billion increase. We got almost $18 billion. And the prior month was revised up from 7.3 to 9.4. One of the drivers was a big jump in credit card debt. Credit card debt in America is now over $1 trillion. That's never happened before, that we've had $1 trillion of credit card debt. We're approaching $2 trillion of student loan debt. I mean, that is astronomical, but we've never had over $1 trillion in credit card debt. Why are Americans relying so heavily on their credit cards? Because they can't afford to buy stuff with the money that they have. So they have to borrow money they don't have. Wages might be going up, but they're not going up as fast as other prices. And so people have to rely on credit. But that's part of the problem, because inflation is not just an increase in a supply of money, but it's also credit, because you can use credit instead of money. So if you can buy stuff with credit, you can bid up prices. And that's what's happening. Because consumers still have access to a lot of credit, they're able to use that credit to keep buying stuff. Now, if they didn't have access to that credit, well, maybe they'd have to stop buying, right? And so the interest rates would have a bigger impact on inflation, because they would be reducing demand, because people wouldn't be able to borrow the money. But if they're borrowing it anyway, even though interest rates have gone up, they keep on borrowing, then you're not getting the reduction in demand. It's just there. And of course, the government hasn't reduced its demand at all, right? It hasn't shrunk its spending because all that is driving consumption and pushing prices higher. You know, also, I mean, I don't want to diminish the loss of life, but look at the fires in Maui, you know, in Lahaina, you know, just decimated, thousands of homes destroyed. Who knows how many people lost their lives? I know there's like 1,000 people that are missing. I'm not sure. I think they have maybe 60 confirmed dead. It's a terrible disaster in Maui. But think about how that kind of disaster, how that impacts what's going to be going on in prices, because all these homes that were there, now they got to be rebuilt. Where's the raw materials going to come to reconstruct them? All these insurance companies have to pay for this. Where are they going to get the money? They got to sell bonds if they were holding on to those. You know, bonds didn't correct. Bonds got clobbered again on the day and on the week. We closed, I think, at new highs, weekly highs. The yield on a 5-year is 4.272. 5-year is 4.272. A 30-year, the 5-year closed at 4.308. Kind of with the yield curve was inverting a bit, but that changed. Now the 5-year is once again higher than the 10-year and the 30-year. So the 5-year closed at 4.308, the 10-year at 4.168, and the 30-year at 4.272. But all these yields are higher than they were previously. And I guess maybe those inflation numbers that were a little bit worse than expected sent the yield on the 5-year higher, because maybe people think that we're going to see an extra rate hike maybe in September. I don't know what, but You got that movement. In fact, the stock market was down on the week, all but the Dow. You know, the Dow was the only index that was positive. The Nasdaq, by the way, has now dropped for 2 weeks in a row. That's the first time that's happened this year. A lot of people might not have realized that we haven't had two back-to-back declines in the Nasdaq until this last week. And so, again, I've been talking on this podcast, the market should be going down, based solely on this backup in interest rates, which has continued. And as far as I'm concerned, looking at the charts, there is no evidence that this is going to stop. I mean, I think rates are going to be moving up towards 5% on these maturities before the end of the year. And that is a huge negative milestone that should be a massive roadblock for the stock market. But we got, you know, consumers are struggling. They're going deeper in the debt. The savings rate is plunging. I got some other economic data that I wanted to talk about. Yeah, the jobless claims, they spiked up again last week. They were up 21,000. They went from 229,000 in the prior week to 248,000. Now, I don't know when the 30,000 people who lost their jobs from yellow, when they're going to show up in these numbers, but that's coming. So you're getting the pickup in unemployment. In fact, what a lot of people just don't seem to get is that when the economy officially goes into recession, I mean, I've been arguing that it's been unofficially in recession for quite some time, but when we officially get into recession, when we finally get a big enough increase in joblessness that it shows up in the statistics, when that happens, the inflation numbers are going to be going in the other direction. So everybody is expecting that, well, we're not going to have, you know, we're going to have a soft landing or not going to land at all. But if we end up in a recession, everybody just assumes, well, then the Fed is going to be able to cut rates, right? Because the economy is going to need stimulus. Well, how do they do that if inflation is moving back up in the other direction? I mean, Powell said at the last press conference that he expects rates to be cut. He expects the Fed to cut rates long before inflation gets back to 2%. But when he said that, it's probably with the expectation that inflation will at least be headed in that direction, that maybe it'll be, you know, 2.5, 2.4, like kind of on a glide path to 2%, and then they'll start cutting rates. But how is Powell going to cut rates if inflation is 4 or 5 and headed higher? How does he do that? Well, he can't, but he's going to have to, which is why there's going to be a currency crisis, a U.S. dollar crisis, and why I'm so bullish on gold. But anyway, I've got more to talk about on this podcast. So we got another commercial break. Stick around. I'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
During that commercial, I happened to be looking at some of the comments that were posted, and I noticed that somebody mentioned that they just had a son, a baby, and they named it Irwin after my dad. So I really appreciate that. There's not a lot of people out there named Irwin, so it's good to have another one. Anyway, I want to get back. Oh, before I move forward with another topic, I circle back. I mentioned the Maui fires. The other thing I just want to bring up, because whenever I see these natural disasters, there's always these Keynesian economists out there trying to point to the silver lining. There are no silver linings. It's just a disaster. It's all bad. There's no good. But they try to claim, well, this is good for the economy. It's going to boost the GDP. It's not good for the economy. It doesn't boost anything. You know, they talk about how much, you know, we're going to have to spend to rebuild what we lost. Yes. But had we not lost it, we could have spent that money on something else. You know, these Keynesians think that economies are driven by spending. They're not. They're driven by savings and investment. And if we spend money rebuilding houses that we used to have, then there's something that we can't create that we otherwise would have had. Because we, instead of making something new, we have to replace something old, right? Something that we already had. So nobody is better off. Because we have to expend all these resources and devote all this labor to replacing what we already had. And that means those resources and that labor can't be used to create something that we didn't have. So this is just people who don't know anything about economics trying to explain the benefits of a disaster. But, you know, speaking of idiots, you know, I want to say something about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, otherwise known as AOC, because ironically, and I didn't even notice this until somebody had emailed me about it, and so I saw her on her Twitter, and I retweeted it. But one of the things I talked about on this podcast years ago was sunscreen. I pointed out that American sunscreen was basically horrible compared to the sunscreen that they use all over the world. And at one point, I had this guy from Israel. He was sending me the Israeli sunscreen in the mail because I couldn't go to the store in America and buy good sunscreen because there's been a lot of advancements in the technology behind sunscreens. And so the products are a lot better everywhere in the world except America. I mean, they may be marginally better here, but they're not nearly as good as what you get every place else. And the reason is the government. I mean, it's been, you know, 20 years or so since they've approved any kind of improvement in sunscreen. So we're 20 years behind at least the rest of the world. And the reason for that is the FDA. The FDA won't approve any of this because they classify sunscreen as a drug or something, right? Because it's got a medical goal to protect you from the UV rays of the sun and to reduce the incidence of skin cancer. And so because it's a drug, you have to get FDA approval. You got to run all these expensive tests. Nobody can afford to do it because it's sunscreen. I mean, how much are you going to charge? I mean, the stuff is kind of expensive, but I mean, you can't charge hundreds of dollars a bottle. I mean, no one's going to buy it. And so the companies are not spending enough money and the process has taken so long that it's just forget about it. I mean, Americans just have to get by with substandard sunscreen because of government, right? And now, of course, skin cancer is the number one cancer in the United States. So we would have a lot less skin cancer if the FDA would let us have good sunscreen. But for our own protection, we can't have it unless, you know, you got a friend who's going to help you smuggle it in into the country. So apparently AOC finally noticed this. And so she went to Twitter and she did a video with some friend of hers. I'm not sure. Maybe she's, you know, in the industry, complaining about the fact that we don't have these good sunscreens. Ironically, of course, it's the government that she loves so much, this big government, that is the reason. And she pointed out that, yes, it's the FDA is the reason. And so she wants Congress to do something to get the FDA to do something to allow the sunscreens in. Has it even dawned on her? Is she starting to think about this? Because this is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, this is just one example of how government screws stuff up, because government screws everything up, not just sunscreen. Government is the reason we have all sorts of problems. The politicians can't, you know, figure this out. It's something that's called unintended consequences, right? The road to hell, or in this case, the road to skin cancer, right, is paved with good intentions. These bureaucrats, oh, we want to protect people, you know, from bad products, and they end up protecting them from good products, right? In the case of sunscreen, you know, let the public decide. You know, we don't need the government. I mean, we already have a danger, right? There's a sun. We could get cancer. So can't we just pick the sunscreen that we want to use? Do we really need to have the government decide which sunscreens we could use and which sunscreens we can't? I mean, can't the marketplace decide that? Aren't people smart enough to figure out what kind of cream to rub on their bodies? I mean, if AOC can figure it out, pretty much anybody can. But she can't connect the dots and see. Now, maybe a light bulb is going to go off in her head and she'll start to think, if the government is screwing this up, what else are they screwing up? And again, the solution to the problem is not more government, but less government. See, that's what AOC is actually advocating for. We need less government, right? She can't, though, really articulate that, hey, government has screwed this up. Now, she thinks Congress needs to solve the problem. They're not solving the problem. They created the problem because they created the FDA. So it's like they have to rein in their own monster. That's what they have to do. See, all of the government solutions involve the elimination of government, right? Repealing a rule or a regulation, because the problem started with the government. The government created it, and the government has to solve it by reversing the damage that it's already done. But I'm glad that AOC at least has found one government program she doesn't like. She now has found something about government to complain about, and we need a solution. The free market has the solution. The government is just not allowing the free market to function. Now, I don't know if, you know, she's going to go anywhere with this. I mean, if she actually could get some FDA reforms done, if she could actually get this sunscreen approved, then that would actually be something good that she did, because no one else has done it. At least she's talking about it. This is the one time that you know, I'm on the same page with AOC. But anyway, I want to move on, though. I want to stay on politics, but I want to move on from AOC to Donald Trump, because I didn't have a chance to talk about the most recent Trump indictment. I only had one podcast again last week, and I had a lot of other stuff I wanted to talk about. So I really couldn't get to this topic. So I really wanted to get to it on this one before it really becomes old news, or before they just indict Donald Trump with yet another crime, right? It seems like every time there's more dirt on Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, they have to come up with another indictment for Donald Trump. So who knows? I mean, they may come up with a fourth one. I think already he's facing like 500 years in jail for basically doing nothing. Meanwhile, the big guy, right, there's a mountain of evidence that he's committed serious crimes, yet nothing. But they're going after Trump. But I want to talk about the last charge against Donald Trump, because of all the indictments, of the three indictments, I think this one is the most problematic. And it's probably, you know, that's why it's that third one, because they're grasping for straws here. You know, they're trying to get more indictments to cover up the criminal conduct of the Biden family. But Trump has basically been indicted for lying. I mean, that's basically what they're saying he did. Like, they're saying Trump lied, right? What was the lie? Well, the lie that he basically told was that the election was rigged. The election was stolen, right? That Biden didn't really win fair and square. That there was some cheating going on, and he thought that he should have won, right? That's what he said. Now, you could say that if you believe it, right? I mean, anybody can question an election if you think it was rigged, if you don't think it was fair, right? You're allowed to question the results of elections. In fact, you have to be allowed to question the results of elections. If you couldn't question it, if you had to accept any result, even if you thought there was cheating or it was rigged, then there would be cheating. They would be rigged because, you know, if you know there's no consequences, right? If you're a kid in class and you know if you cheat on your exam, that nobody can call you out. The teacher can't accuse you of cheating. You're just going to get away with it. Well, then you're going to cheat, right? A lot of people would if they know that there's no consequences. It's because you might get caught cheating. Well, then you better not cheat because, you know, there's could be negative consequences of getting caught. But if there's no negative consequences to cheating on an election, well, you're going to get more cheating. So you got to have people, calling out these elections. So Donald Trump did that. He's not the first president to think that he should have won, right? I mean, a lot of, you know, that happens. And as a matter of fact, it's not like anything happened other than the September or January 6th stuff, right? It's not like Donald Trump got the army and as commander in chief and basically stayed in the White House and didn't turn over power, right? Didn't let Biden become president. It wasn't like it was a military coup where Donald Trump said, look, I won the election, so I'm staying here. I'm the president. And, you know, he had Joe Biden arrested and put in jail or something and had declared martial law. He didn't do any of that. I mean, it was a normal handoff. I mean, as soon as whatever the day came, Donald Trump stepped down, Biden stepped up. It was the same transfer of presidential power that we've always had. I think Trump didn't go to the inauguration. I think that was his way of protesting. He just didn't show up. Nothing illegal about that. He's not required to show up. You know, you can't put the guy in jail for that. But he didn't do anything to upset the process, right? The process went on. Even though he complained, he didn't do anything. I mean, it's just he just accepted the results, even though he questioned their legitimacy, which is his right to do. But what the Justice Department is accusing Trump of doing is lying. Basically, they're saying, you know, Donald Trump really didn't believe that. Donald Trump knew that he lost fair and square. He knew that the Democrats didn't cheat. He knew that everything was honest, that there was nothing rigged, right? And he just lied. He just pretended that it wasn't fair. How the hell are you going to charge somebody criminally for that? Because first of all, even if he did lie, I mean, lying's not a crime. You know, I mean, if it was, every congressman, every senator, they'd all be in jail, which, you know, is not a bad idea. I mean, if you're going to put Trump in jail for lying, then you better put everybody in jail. And, you know, there's some appeal there. You know, I mean, that might be a worthwhile, but you can't just single out Donald Trump and say, we're going to take one politician who lied and put him in jail, but we're going to let all these other lying politicians, you know, run free. They all lied. That's part of the job. You're not going to be a successful politician if you tell the truth. You know, part of the job description is that you got to be a good liar. You can't get elected telling the truth. I mean, maybe you could get elected once on a freak, you know, but you're not going to get reelected over and over again if you tell the truth. No. Your lying opponent is going to beat you. You know, I mean, why do you think so many politicians are lawyers? Because lawyers are good liars. No, nothing against lawyers. I mean, some lawyers, yeah. But I mean, lawyers lie. That's what they do. They're hired to lie, right? You are a lawyer and you have a client that you are representing. Maybe it's your criminal lawyer. And your client's been accused of a crime and he's guilty. Well, you've got to lie and pretend he's innocent. because you're hired to get him acquitted. So you might have to lie, right? You're trying to convince the jury that your guilty client is innocent, right? You're making them believe something that's not true, right? It's lying, right? Or, you know, in a civil case, right? You know, you're representing somebody who's being sued. Maybe they actually did something wrong, but you're hired to say they didn't, right? You've got to defend them against this lawsuit. Or maybe you got a client who's got a bullshit, frivolous lawsuit, and you got to pretend that it's legit. And so you lie, it's all lies, right? And so these lawyers, if they're really good liars, then they go into politics. And if they're really good liars in politics, then they make a career in politics. They stay in office. So you can't basically say, hey, Donald Trump is a politician who lied, so let's charge him. Because we've never thrown politicians in jail because they told lies to the voters, because that's basically what they do. And we kind of accept that that's what they do. But here's the other big problem with this so-called lie. It's an opinion. It isn't even like a fact, right? He's saying, I think that this election was rigged. I think it was stolen. I don't think it was fair. How is that even a lie? I mean, in order for that to be a lie, you would actually have to have evidence, right? Where Donald Trump wrote it down somewhere, a note to somebody. You know, I know this election was fair and square, but I'm gonna pretend that it wasn't. I mean, I know everything was on the up and up, but I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to say that it was rigged, it was stolen. Now, even if they had that evidence, I still don't think this is a crime. But that's what you would need to prove that he lied. Because I don't think Donald Trump lied. I think he actually believed that the election was rigged. Because after all, he's Donald Trump. He's the greatest president ever as far as he's concerned. How could he not have been reelected when he was so great? Well, obviously, the other guy cheated, right? I mean, that's what you would expect Donald Trump to think. That's the kind of guy he is. I couldn't have lost fair and square. The other guy must have cheated because I'm so great, right? I had the greatest economy in the world. Everybody loves me. And the only reason I could lose is if the other guy cheats. And you don't blame him. Look at all the other lies that were told about Donald Trump for the 4 years he was president, right? We all know that. All this stuff has come out. All the, you know, the conspiracies, the Russians, you know, they conspired to throw the election, right? That was all nonsense. That whole investigation has now been exposed as nonsense. There was no collusion between Trump and Russia. This was all made up. But also, we now know for a fact that the Hunter Biden laptop stuff, a legitimate issue that would have derailed the campaign, had the media, had social media, mainstream media, accurately reported what happened with Hunter Biden, Donald Trump would have won. No doubt in my mind. That was such a big scandal. It would have derailed Biden, because a lot of the votes that cost Trump the election was anti-Trump. It wasn't pro-Biden. It was, you know, I don't like Trump, so I'm going to vote against Trump. They weren't voting for Biden. Not that many people actually liked Biden. Biden won because there were people who didn't like Trump. Well, if this story had gotten proper attention, the people who didn't like Trump would have disliked Biden even more. This would have put Biden in such a bad light that people would have said, you know, I got the lesser of two evils. I don't like Trump, but I'm certainly not voting for Biden, so I'm stuck with Trump by default. That's what would have happened. So Donald Trump has a right to be pissed off, right, that this happened. But now he knows, right? He knows that the media colluded with the government to bury this story. They never would have done that if it was negative information about Trump. They would have blown it out of proportion. So is that cheating? I think it is. I don't think that's fair. If one side has the media behind them, colluding with them, you know, it wasn't a fair election. Now, there are a lot of other reasons that it may not have been fair. Were the votes accurately counted? Was there some, you know, shenanigans going on at the polls? I don't know. Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. But you know what I always think about is the Democrats, people in Democrats, they dislike Donald Trump so much, right, that I think that in the minds of a lot of people, the ends would justify the means, right? Even if you have to cheat to make sure Donald Trump doesn't get reelected, it's okay. Because having him be elected is so bad. It's so bad, we can't let that happen. So even if we have to cheat, like, it's like we're going to lose democracy forever. So in order to save democracy, well, we got to like get rid of it for at least one election, right? That is the deal with the devil that they have to make, right? Because, you know, I mean, I don't like to use the Nazi comparison, but, you know, sometimes it's the best analogy, even though there's no similarities. But, you know, Adolf Hitler came to power through an election, you know? So like knowing what you know about Hitler, if you could have cheated on the election and the result would have been that he didn't get elected, would it have been worth it? Well, sure, right? Yes, if we could cheat on an election and then Hitler loses instead of wins, right? Now, I mean, a lot of people, Democratic Party, as far as they were concerned, he was like Adolf Hitler reincarnated, right? I mean, that's how bad a lot of people think of Trump, right? Because there were actually a lot of, you know, Nazi type, you know, references, you know, to Trump. He's a fascist. He's all this bad thing. So I can see that there would be people who might even be willing to do something wrong because it justifies the results, which is that Donald Trump doesn't get reelected. Now, Donald Trump could certainly think, yeah, I've got all these enemies who lied about me, who accused me of all these things that weren't true, who cheated. And so do I believe that the election was honest? Oh, I think it was rigged. It was rigged against me. Part of the deep state, you know, whatever. That's his opinion, and he is entitled to it. Maybe he's right. Maybe he's wrong. But it doesn't even matter. But now the precedent that we have set is the government is charging a politician for expressing a political opinion that they claim is a lie and that the politician who told it knew it was a lie. Well, if this is the case, again, every politician could be charged with a crime at any time, which is a weapon that you don't want to put in the hands of another politician. Because who is in charge of the Justice Department? Biden, the incumbent Democrat. Who is now being charged with a crime? The most likely Republican, the opposition. So we're now creating a precedent where the president who's in power, who probably got to power by lying, could now have his opponents charged with the crime of lying that he's committing himself and put him in jail. I mean, this whole charge is so ridiculous. But the worst part about it is that we're allowing it to happen. And what it really says about what's happening to our country. Not that I'm a big fan of the democratic process of democracy. I'm not. I believe in Republican government. I mean, I think that we should have elections to a degree, but I'm not somebody who thinks that we should do what the majority wants, because the majority is typically wrong. I mean, it's very rare that the majority gets it right. And normally, the more people who turn out to vote, the less likely the better candidate is to win. You know, everybody, you know, wants a big turnout. I don't want a big turnout. You know, I want the people who are going to vote for the socialists to stay home. You know, I just want the guys who are going to vote for a more free market oriented candidate. I want those guys to show up. The people who are going to vote for the guy that I don't like, I don't want those guys voting. You know, the whole idea that you want everybody to vote. No, you don't. Why would you want the fools to vote and vote in some idiot? I don't want that. You know, I want a competent electorate. I don't want to make sure that every incompetent person is at the ballot box casting a vote. But what is going on right now where you can have one politician, right, criminally prosecuting his opponent? This is going down the pathway of Banana Republic, right? This is not something that anybody would think would happen in the United States, yet it is happening. And you're getting no real backlash. And at the same time, that we're getting all of these charges, these, you know, trumped up charges against Trump for basically nothing. We're ignoring the fact that the sitting president has probably committed major crimes. And nobody cares. I mean, yeah, you turn on Fox News, yes, you'll hear about all this stuff. But that's it. You know, well, maybe One America News or some of these, you know, the other conservative outlets. But in the mainstream media, it's crickets. You know, all they talk about is Donald Trump. And if they talk about Biden at all, it's all what a great father he is. Yes, he has a troubled son, but, you know, he stands by him. I mean, with only a father, you know, he's, you know, yes, oh, he's great. He gets on the phone with his son's businessman to talk about the weather. Oh, what a nice dad he is. You know, like, you know, making up excuses, justifying all the stuff. Just, you know, being completely blind to reality while they're fixated on the fantasy of Trump. But meanwhile, this is doing real damage because of the political precedent that is being set. Now, to the extent that Donald Trump actually gets convicted of one of these offenses by, you know, a rigged jury that hates Donald Trump, you know, you find, you know, 12 people that hate Trump. It shouldn't be hard to find them in Washington, D.C. I don't know if they're trying to move the venue to Maryland or something, but, you know, they're going to fill it up with Trump haters. Probably anybody that voted for Trump is going to get disqualified, so they won't even be allowed on the jury, right? Because they'll say, oh, that guy is biased, right? He voted for Trump. So you'll have a whole jury of people who didn't vote for Trump. But assuming that they can, you know, get a orchestrated conviction here, it's going to go up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is going to have to hear it. See, normally, you know, they wouldn't hear a case, but when it's a president of the United States, you know, they're not going to not hear this case. And there's no way that they're not going to throw out a conviction if they get one. No chance. The Supreme Court that we've got now, you know, there's no way, because they're going to throw out the whole thing because it's ridiculous. And now that's going to open up a whole new problem for the Supreme Court, right? Because, oh, no, look, they let this guilty guy go. It's all political. We need to stack the court. We need more justices. You know, there's nothing in the Constitution that says you have to have 9 of them. You know, they started out with 6, which didn't even make much sense, because when you got 3-3, you got a tie. So they should have an odd number. But so they ended up with 9. But the last president who tried to increase the number was Roosevelt, and he was getting close, and he ended up not doing it. There was this one justice that, you know, who had been voting against these New Deal programs, and then he switched his vote, right? And that became known as the switch in time that saved 9, because Roosevelt was going to put some lackeys on the court because the justices were doing the right thing, and they were striking down all of his unconstitutional, you know, New Deal programs. Well, they're talking about that again. And, you know, reversing or throwing out a Trump conviction could be a catalyst. That's assuming that Biden gets reelected, which is a stretch, because I think that what's going on right now in the economy and with these charges, I think is actually going to work to Trump's advantage. So he might just win. And of course, if he wins, then to the extent he was convicted, he could just pardon himself, I guess. And in fact, a lot of people would actually, I think, like to see him win that might not have been in favor of Trump before. Now that he's got all these charges, he might actually get some sympathy votes, and there might, you know, people might want to see him actually win who might have voted against him. So like just about everything that the Democrats do, this might just backfire on them. And, you know, just like all their government programs and the unintended consequences, whatever they want to accomplish with their legislation, they achieve the opposite. Well, the same thing may happen with Trump. They want to defeat him, and they may just make sure that he does what only one man has done in history. And that was actually one of my favorite presidents. He may have actually be my favorite president, Grover Cleveland, who's the only American president to serve 2 non-consecutive terms. Trump might pull a Grover Cleveland. Oh, and by the way, you know, one of the things that made Grover Cleveland famous, you know, we have all these natural disasters, but there was a drought. I think it was in Texas, the farmers, and they needed like $10,000. And so Congress actually passed this bill to give aid to these drought-stricken farmers, and Cleveland vetoed it. And he said he can't put his finger anywhere in the Constitution where the government is authorized to do that. He said, yes, we've got farmers that are in trouble, but we can't give them any money because there's nothing in the Constitution that authorizes such an expenditure. But what Cleveland did do is he donated his own money. He knew he had no right to take taxpayer money and help the farmers, but he was able to take his own money and help the farmers. And in fact, after he vetoed that bill, the farmers got enough money by private charity. They ended up getting more money than they were going to get through an unconstitutional appropriation, which Grover Cleveland had the integrity to veto. There's not many people today, in fact, there's nobody today that would veto a bill to give aid to somebody who was stricken by a natural disaster. That's a matter of course. Everybody expects anytime there's a disaster, federal government is going to be spending money. Well, once upon a time, that was unconstitutional. Now, the Constitution hasn't changed. We have the same Constitution now that we had when Grover Cleveland was president. What's changed is that we no longer honor the Constitution. The Constitution is no longer enforced because the judges let the government get away with violating it. Anyway, that's it for now. Hopefully now that I'm back in Connecticut, we'll be able to have more frequent podcasts. And again, next week we'll be bringing them to you in 4K reception. So bye for now.